Were the passengers on the Titanic happy? Oh yeah. They were ecstatically happy. Why? Because they were on the greatest ship known to humanity. And it was brand new. One of the passengers on the ship said that the first impression he got on boarding the Titanic, one thing he'll always remember, was the smell of fresh paint. Because, as I said, this was the ship's maiden voyage. Everything about it was gleaming new. Smelled good, looked good, cost a lot of money to get on the Titanic. And everybody wanted to be on the Titanic. The passengers in steerage, that is the third class passengers, had it better than second class passengers on any other ship. And second class passengers had it better than first class passengers on any other ship. I don't remember who said this. Might have been Bruce Ismay. Was he the White Star Line president, or was he the designer of the Titanic? Somebody said that not even God could sink this ship. The Titanic was the place to be. And of course, if you were rich, you got a first class berth on the Titanic. You could eat in the first class restaurants. You could smoke in the first class lounges. And you could frolic about on the first class decks. Oh yes. People were extremely happy on the day that they boarded the Titanic. They went up the gangplank, waved at all the people, and they felt really safe on that ship. In fact, they felt so safe on the ship that later on, don't mean to give away the story here before the end of this video, but spoiler alert, all right? Later on, when the ship was fatally struck, the ship that God himself couldn't sink, later on when that ship was struck by an iceberg, and they began to work the davits and load the lifeboats, people said that they were hesitant to get on the lifeboat because why would you risk getting on a tiny little wooden row, row, row your boat kind of vessel when you would be leaving the greatest ship ever made? And then why would you allow yourself to be lowered by a rope six stories down into the North Atlantic when you were on the greatest ship ever built? So even after the iceberg struck the Titanic, and even when the ship started to tilt, you still felt safer on the Titanic. You were deluded into thinking that because it was such a grand vessel, and because you were surrounded by so many people, that was another deception, that protection comes by numbers. And because the makers of the Titanic had made everything to first-class perfection, you got a false sense of security on the Titanic. So much so that even again, when it was struck by the fatal blow, it still felt like the safest place to be. Well, it's just a little tilt. You can adjust for it. You just kind of walk at a 20 degree angle. Up, now a 30 degree angle. Up, now a 40 degree angle. Up, now a 45 degree angle. Were the people on the Titanic happy? Yeah, they were tickled as punch. Well, here's a weird question I want to ask you about that. What if someone on the dock at Southampton before the Titanic loaded up, what if they somehow knew about what would happen to the Titanic on the North Atlantic? And what if they stood outside of the boat and said to all the passengers going by, including the John Jacob Astors, the Guggenheims, the Strausses, all the glitterati, as well as the steerage passengers, what if they said, do not get on this boat. You will not survive this passage. Something terrible is going to happen. Nobody would listen to you. Especially if you were dressed like a common person, if you had no certification. For instance, did you design the Titanic? No. Bruce Ismay tells us that this is the most seaworthy vessel ever made. Who are you? I'm just telling you, I have inside information. Do not get on that ship. Because by that time already, the band would have struck up. I imagine that the orchestra on the Titanic would have already begun its happy melody. And I do not doubt this, that the scent of the food that was cooked, prepared by the first class chefs, would already be wafting out from the portholes. Just as when you're walking past a barbecue restaurant and the scent of the sizzling meat comes to your nose and it draws you in. And plus you see all the fine people, the Astors, the Guggenheims. The Strausses getting on the ship. Well, they're getting on, you're telling me I shouldn't do it. You're telling me something terrible is going to happen? You must have not heard that God himself can't sink this ship. And on they go to the Titanic. Because the Titanic had a reputation. The biggest, the best, the strongest, the fanciest, the safest, and everybody else is getting on it. So on they go. And then on the night of April 12th, 1912, God sent an iceberg prepared for the Titanic, because the Titanic was a parable of everything that humanity holds dear. Visible strength, visible reputation. Everybody wants to be on it. It's the place to be. God put that iceberg there to maybe suggest to us that the Titanic is a parable of human institutions that put their confidence in the flesh, put their confidence in an institution. The White Star Line, Bruce Ismay, reputable company, reputable man, wouldn't steer us wrong. And all it took was a chunk of ice. The wisdom of God, the finger of God. One of the many tragedies of the Titanic is that innocent people perished. People who had done no particular evil in their life, but were merely lulled, attracted, seduced by the finery, went on board. There's that little aggravating person down there at the dock warning people not to get on. Probably the people who were going on said, well, he's just jealous. He's just jealous because he couldn't afford a ticket. He's just jealous because he can't even get a third class ticket. He's just jealous because he can't go on the world's finest craft. He's just jealous. And the people were happy, they were dancing, they were eating, they were drinking, up until the hour that the iceberg struck the ship. Or should I say, the ship struck the iceberg. Because the ship had a date with destiny. Even after the ship struck the iceberg, the band played on. The people still felt safe, even though they had all felt. I've read eyewitness accounts. Everyone felt the strike. After that, everyone felt disquieted. They felt something was wrong. They had this ominous sense that a terrible thing had just occurred. Fueling the deception of safety was the fact that the North Atlantic that night was as calm as a backyard pond. Not a ripple on the sea. Flat as glass. In fact, that very fact prevented the watchman in the crow's nest from seeing the iceberg. He watched, scoured, but because there was no rushing water crashing against the base of the berg, didn't see it. blind, leading the blind, on a craft that not even God can sing. There are other institutions in this world that people are assured that God can't sink, because God's very name is attached to it, to them. And Christ's name is attached to them. I'm thinking of the most popular religion in the world right now, the name of Christ attached to it, a so-called beacon of safety, a beacon of acceptance, a beacon of popularity, yet built by the arm of the flesh, propped up by the strength of the flesh. Here's an irony. Just thought of this. There was a boat there that was destined for disaster and death. There was another ship a long time ago that was destined for life and salvation. And that was the ship that Noah built. What a difference between that craft and the Titanic. I believe it was smaller than the Titanic. Don't quote me on that, but I do know this, that there were not first class, second class, third class berths. I know that the fresh paint smell of Noah's Ark was tar. I know that that boat was built completely for function and not style. And I know that when that boat was being built, no one looked at it with admiration. No one looked at it with any desire to get on it. And no one wanted to talk to the lunatic who was building it. And yet, this particular ship was for the salvation of humanity. 8 members of humanity to begin a new world in a new eon. Jesus Christ spoke of the Ark of Noah. He talked about the disposition of the population at that time. And it's eerily similar to the disposition of the people of the latter days, according to Jesus Christ, in that they were eating and drinking and marrying, up until the day the flood took them all away. The North Atlantic, smooth as glass. The days of Noah, smooth as glass, not a cloud in the sky. And yet there is one lonely man heralding, if you do not board this ship, you will die. Just as the one lonely man heralding at Southampton, if you do board this ship, you will die. There is a time coming upon this earth, the likes of which the earth has never seen, and it is drawing very near. Readers of the scripture will know it as the time of tribulation. It is a time that will make the flood of Noah seem like a dress rehearsal of disaster. It will make the Titanic, in comparison, look like a Sunday outing on the lake. It's a time when a third of the earth will be burned up, when a third of humanity will be killed, when the earth will be pounded with 90-pound hailstones, when locusts will swarm the earth for 5.5 months, when a third of the fresh water of the earth will be turned to blood, and when people will be begging for death yet not be able to receive that boon. Those who don't want to die will die, and those who do won't. That time is coming. And once again, God has provided an ark of safety that some will be rescued out of the coming indignation. And that ark of safety today is the Gospel of Paul. It is a message of the sufficiency of Jesus Christ. It's a message of the insufficiency of flesh, either to will or to work anything for the sake of God's delight. For it is God who must operate in each one in order to will and to work for the sake of his delight. But few believe that truth today. Few believe that Jesus accomplished everything on the hill called Calvary. Few believe even that Jesus Christ, the Savior of the world, entered into death for 3 days. He did not exist. And then was raised by his Father and conquered death one for all. But hardly anybody believes that truth either, that one conquered death for all. No. For the majority make Adam greater than Christ. The majority will make the eating of a piece of fruit more consequential than 6 hours of torture by the Son of God on a cross. These are being led to destruction. But there is an ark of safety. It is the Gospel of Paul. It is simply this: the belief that Jesus Christ died for sin, that he took away sin, that he dealt with sin so that we don't have to, that he overwhelmed our disbelief. He overwhelmed the disbelief of the entire world, for none are able to come to Christ apart from him, for there is no one righteous, no, not one. They have all gone out of the way, all avoid him, all. No one can choose him because he chooses them. Everyone eventually comes to live with God for eternity, but there is a boat that leads to life, to early life, to a shore before the shore, to those to whom he gives to abandon all hopes of the fresh paint of flesh, of the strong arm, of building something in one's own name, delivered from every confidence of the flesh. Yeah. The people on the Titanic were very happy. The people watching Noah and his family get on the boat were very happy. But the happiness is short-lived. But the joy that comes from giving up everything, including one's own confidence in one's self, to Christ, that joy is aeonian.